Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I'm your host on the weekend show and also throughout the week at our website, kereport.com, and on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. It was another very, very busy week. A lot of daily editorials and a lot more company introductions and interviews. Please, everybody, keep on sending me your emails. Let me know what you think of the companies I'm bringing on in the resource sector and even outside of the resource sector. I've really been focusing over the last few months now. Let's get into this weekend show as I am kicking the show off with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. This is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world, also writes the In the Know Trader for the retail side, and has a piece called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs. Rick, let's start with U.S. equity markets. The end of the week, the market's performing quite well, and that's on the back of a pretty disappointing jobs number. Clearly, investors are thinking that the Fed is going to keep that money tap open. But Rick, what are you seeing in the equity markets here? They've mostly moved sideways for the last 3 weeks, having a bit of a breakout at the end of the week. How do you view the health of U.S. equities?
I think in general, Corey, things are good, especially if you look at the S&P and the Dow. NASDAQ certainly having a good day today, but it is terribly underperformed from mid-April on. If you take a look at technology versus the S&P, consumer discretionary versus the S&P, both have really badly underperformed. And it's very possible that that continues. And it makes me think that, you know, there's still going to be more sector rotation into cyclicals and potentially out of the growth side. So I would still say value will trump growth. And in general, the market looks okay. And, you know, the S&P is out to new all-time highs today. And, you know, it, after going sideways during earnings season, we're kind of getting a bump up now. And, you know, we've seen most of companies report already, so we're on the tail end of earnings. The fact that we can get a move like this, especially to end the week, we had told our institutional clients and retail clients that as long as the S&P held 4124, there was no worry. And the weekly low was 4128 when we sold off on Monday or Tuesday this week. I don't remember which day it was, but you know, we held exactly where we needed to, and the S&P has turned around and made new all-time highs. So all is good, and I think there's more to come on the upside for the equity markets.
And it's really just this continued rotation, right? As you said, there are a couple of sectors that are standing out. We'll cover a lot of that kind of later on in the show. But when it comes to just the available capital, I think we can both say that investors, they're not fearful. They're still pretty optimistic about the markets and potentially even this economic restart. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair statement. They are optimistic, and there hasn't really been much to be pessimistic about. And when there are, you know, the occasional news events that one could worry about the market, you get a 1 or 2 day sell-off and then buyers come right back in, which shows you how much demand there is for stocks. And it continues to happen. And the fact that we held that key 4124 level in the S&P and have broken out above 4200 to new highs is, to me, very important and shows that, you know, there's still demand and all is okay.
Now, when you talk about potential news events that could scare investors away, is there anything on your radar that could trigger that a bit more defensive trade? Because, again, at the tail end of the week, we got a bad jobs number, and that is actually helping the market.
Yeah, you never know, because the other thing that's really happening big in the last 2 days is that the dollar has come off strongly. And, you know, we went from the dollar index went from, I don't know, 92, 40-ish or 30-ish down to about 90, 40 today. That's a big move in just 2 days. And that down move in the dollar, you know, you look at 2020, the dollar went straight down and equities went straight up. So when you get a big move in the dollar down, it helps the equity market. And so I don't know if today's move in equities is really the jobs report related or more dollar related. But either way, the market's up and they like what they see.
What is your assessment of the dollar? Because 2021, the dollar was off to a pretty decent start for the first 3 months, really climbing from below 90 on the dollar index the whole way up to about 93.5. But then April, it was almost a straight down move for the dollar the whole way back to about that 90 and change level. Do you think that was really just the start of another leg down for the dollar?
So we played that dollar move perfectly. We were long the dollar index right on the lows, 89.23. I think the low print was 89.21. So we bought the low and we held it to 92.91. So we took out, I don't know, 80% of the dollar, the bullish move that happened to start the year. I have been bullish the dollar up until today. And I think today's move is enough. It's going to take us out of in the no trader. Last week we bought the dollar. We're only going to lose a fraction of a percent because we really tightened up the stop when I saw things stall where it did. And I think today could be the first time that I'm going to lose my dollar bullishness in the near term. And I knew everybody was just way too bearish the dollar to start the year. But the fact that we've done what we did in the last 2 days, I think, is very significant. And unless the dollar immediately rebounds, then I think we could end up testing those lows that we saw right at the start of the year. So, yeah, things started very well for the dollar, opposite to how the market thought it would. But now it may end up being correct. So you might have squeezed out, you know, some of the enough of the shorts to allow the market to go down.
What do you think's driving the dollar moves here? Because in all fairness, April, we were peppered with some pretty good economic data out of the U.S. and the dollar went down. We've had the Fed just consistently being as boring as possible and keeping their current money printing program really at just current levels. So what are some of the key drivers behind future dollar moves in your eyes?
I think that the market is looking at the Washington political story and you know, the Democratic agenda and what Biden is doing. And, you know, his big stimulus programs, which in general I agree with and the country needs, is printing a heck of a lot of money. You know, these are multi-trillion dollar programs that he's trying to get through Congress. And that's not helpful for the dollar. That devalues the dollar. And I think that's why the marketplace was so bearish to start the year, is they knew he had won the presidential election. They knew that his stimulus programs were going to cost a lot and that the government was going to need to essentially print a heck of a lot of money for all these programs to be put into place if they pass. And that's the biggest drag on the dollar to me, and why, you know, people were so bearish.
Interesting. How is that lower dollar playing into inflation expectations? Because that's what everybody seems to have their eye on, including the central banks, is inflation. We have seen inflation expectations tick up, but some people are still claiming that that's just going to be transitory inflation. This is an argument that I think will go on forever, but where do you stand on the inflation debate?
Yeah, so since early fall of 2020, the model that we look at to gear inflation, upcoming inflation, has been showing that investors are positioned for an upcoming inflationary environment. And I think that model that we use has been dead on, because it's now 4 months of last year plus, it has consistently showed inflationary expectations. And even though our Fed chairman is saying don't worry about inflation, the market investors certainly are worried about inflation. And I think, like you say, this is a debate that's going to last for quite some time. Investors are betting it's going to happen. The Fed is saying it's not. And until you see a change in the investor positioning in the markets, and that includes a whole bunch of markets we look at and the relative performance of different markets to each other, then I think you're going to see this investors position this way and saying that we're going to see inflation. And it'll be interesting to see how long Fed Chairman Powell keep saying, well, you know, don't worry about it. So I think the debate will go on not only between investors themselves, but between investors and the Fed. And I agree with you. This is not going away anytime soon. And if you know, the weaker dollar, you're seeing it help the metals. Gold is over 1800. We perfectly, you know, got the bottom in the gold market. We told that long-term investors should get long between 1710 and 1640. Remember, the low was somewhere 1685. And so we're positioned long. We've got the right move here. And what I've been writing recently is that bears are really in trouble in gold. They've lost control of the gold market. Bulls are not totally in control yet. I think you need a breakout over 1920 that stays above 1920 for bulls to fully be in charge of the gold market. But right now, bears are really hurting. And I'm glad about that because we're long gold.
It's quite the battle between the bulls and the bears when it came to gold, hey? Especially in the last few weeks, gold was trading in about a $50 range, and it couldn't break out over 15 or over 1800, but then it also had support around 1750, and we finally did get that breakout this week. But again, there's a lot of other resistance levels that gold needs to take out. You mentioned that you really want to see gold up in the 1900s. How plausible is that in the near term? What do you think, Rick?
Corey, I think it's plausible if the dollar breaks to its lows. If you test 89 and a quarter, anything down near there, and or make new lows, I think gold's got really room to run, and that you know, north of 1900, where it failed. The last failure in gold, if I remember correctly, got up to 1927, and that's, you know, we had that day warned that if it didn't close up there, it was a false breakout, and you know, that was the top day. I forget what month it was, but if you get gold back above, you know, roughly 1920, that's great news for gold, and it's very possible if we see the low being retested in the dollar.
Rick, when it comes to the generalist community that you talk to and deal with, how are they viewing gold right now? Because if you listen to the gold bugs, they're saying that gold is has never been this hated before, this ignored when it was moving down for those 7 months. I take the other side of that, saying that the generalist community is still paying attention to gold. They just saw other opportunities out there. They didn't necessarily hate it. They were just waiting for a bit of a trend change. What have you been hearing in terms of generalist investors' attitude towards gold?
Most of them are generally bullish gold, but interestingly, I didn't think I'd see the day you're getting some of them talking about the cryptos. And, you know, you certainly, as good as gold has been the last month, you certainly made a heck of a lot more money being long, you know, some of the cryptos. And I don't think gold is being replaced by the crypto market, but the fact that hedge funds are now looking in that direction towards whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum, you know, there are now Ethereum futures and traded on a Chicago Merc. And, you know, once you had the Bitcoin futures traded starting in, I think it was December of 2018, happened to be the top of Bitcoin as soon as they started trading futures. But the fact that there are now Ethereum futures on the Chicago Merc is giving credence to, you know, the second most important crypto. And the fact that there is a futures market for it says that you can't have a futures market exist without institutional partaking. And the fact that, you know, you're seeing a few thousand contracts traded in Ethereum each day. And it's an Ethereum contract. When the Chicago Merc started the futures contract, Ethereum was so cheaply priced that one contract was 50 Ethereum. Now 50 Ethereum is over 150 grand because Ethereum was going at 3,500. So, you know, it's well over 150,000. I think when they started trading, 50 contracts was less than $50,000. So once again, you're knocking out some of the people who could play because they're getting so higher priced, which is why Bitcoin futures came up recently with just, I don't know, a week or two ago with the micro futures. you can now trade Bitcoin futures instead of five of them, which nobody except institutions could afford to trade when they're trading at 50,000 and the contract's 250,000. And the margin was like 85,000 for one contract. Obviously, individual investors are not putting up $85,000 to trade Bitcoin. So they lost, the futures market very quickly lost the individuals playing, the speculators. So now what they did is create a Bitcoin micro future, which is simply one contract, one Bitcoin. So now it's only a $50,000 contract, and it's very easy for individual investors to start playing again. So, and the thing is that the Bitcoin is, the new micro future is 1/10 of one Bitcoin future. So, you know, the value of this new contract is really only a $5,000 contract. So now you can, anybody can play this, can play Bitcoin in a very, you know, liquid way, as an alternative to the cash market at $50,000. You can trade a Bitcoin at 1/10 its price through the futures market. So all this is really saying that, sure, gold, you know, has been around for thousands of years and has always had some type of intrinsic value, and it still does. But you are seeing this, very surprisingly, the crypto market also getting institutional interest. And I think it's not going to necessarily hurt the price of gold because there's still plenty of funds who invest in gold. But it is now a looked at alternative investment. And even though somebody today, I don't know, in the government said that, you know, beware trading cryptos, you could lose 100% of your money, and that's true, people are willing to, you know, get involved.
That's such a big development, having the institutions also trading it. And look, in all fairness, cryptos have been way more exciting than gold. It makes sense why some traders are riding that wave higher, because look at the moves Ethereum made just this week. Rick, where do you stand, though? Do you think, A, cryptos are going to be around and this relevant for a prolonged period of time? And do you think a crash is due because of the high volatility that seems to be inherent in cryptos and that almost euphoric rise that we've seen?
It's a good question, Corey. You know, would I love to see a crash? Yeah, because I'm not long any of it myself yet. So I wouldn't mind seeing Ethereum come off $1,000 or $1,500 or some number that just makes it more reasonable to take a shot at. But it seems like they're going to be around. And I can't tell you, you know, look, people are going to lose money on these things, but a lot of people have made money too. And you just have to know that if you're going to play it, you need to be aware that any single day can move 20 or 30% against you, 20 or 30% with you, although that's less likely, and that it's possible that this stuff at some point in time ends up being worthless and then you lose everything. That's the risk you have to take. You don't have that risk in the equity market. You know that even if the equity market crashes, you know, there's a value to the U.S. stock market, that the S&P is always going to have value, that companies will always have value. You have no idea in the crypto space if any of this stuff is going to have value. Will somebody ever need to actually own Bitcoin for any reason that's anything other than speculative? Even, let's say, Elon Musk, who said that he bought millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin for his, I guess it was Tesla, now owns Bitcoin. And other hedge funds have come forward to say that they own, and other individual companies. The question is, will Bitcoin or any other crypto ever become so popular that it's actually, you know, traded and needed other than just people speculatively saying, oh, I own it and I played with it? If you're not going to need Bitcoin to go into the supermarket to buy something, I'm not sure it's ever going to really need to have value. It may have value. People will bid it to some speculative level. But will it need to be there? That's the question. And to me, that's the unknown part. Will I ever need to own a Bitcoin? I need to own U.S. dollars. because I can't go in and spend money for my family. I can't pay a mortgage in Bitcoin, at least not yet. And even if some company says, hey, we're going to let you pay your mortgage in Bitcoin, as long as I can still pay in dollars, I don't need Bitcoin. So unless Bitcoin is going to replace the world's most important currency, I don't see why anybody would ever need to own it. You might want to own it, but if you don't need to own it, there's only so much value it can have at some point, because then the only people who are buying it are really speculators. And something at some point will make a crash. You have crashes in every market. There isn't a market that exists that doesn't have crashes. And Bitcoin has had multiple crashes over the years. So it's lost, 80% of its value multiple times. So whether it's Ethereum, Bitcoin, or something else that comes along, if I don't have a need to have it, and the bulk of the population, whether it's in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, doesn't have a need, but it's only a want for speculative purposes, and there's only so much value Bitcoin or anything else can have. And at some point, somebody's going to realize that, hey, it's way too much. They're going to sell, and selling will begin selling. And at some point, people are going to lose real money again. When that happens, I don't know.
Fair enough, Rick. No one knows. But it's been a very interesting ride on that crypto market. And for as many haters as there are out there, clearly there's more people that love it or at least see an opportunity to put some money there. Whether right or wrong, they've been right recently. So we'll see how much longer that market can continue to move. Rick, we'll wrap it up here. It's great having you back on the show, buddy. Thank you very much for taking some time on this weekend show. I look forward to reconnecting with you in about a month's time. Rick, I know everybody appreciates your thoughts. So again, thank you for this weekend show.
Corey, thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure being on your show.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.